Do 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 do. It's that show. It's about sword fighting and dragons, and it's also about a lot of incest and beheading and a lot of other stuff we don't need to address. Anyway, welcome to the Game of Thrones edition of the Serious TV Drama Podcast. I'm Scott, and joining me on this hopefully 6-episode journey is our own resident Khaleesi, the breaker of chain mails, the mother of drag-on sentences. It's Jamie.
Hi.
I feel sorry for you, Jamie, because you've probably heard me do the intro, I don't know, 17,000 times now. To explain.
Yeah,
go ahead.
It's gonna haunt my dreams. It's okay.
I apologize. Just so the folks out there know what the heck I'm talking about, since I obviously just led off the podcast with an inside joke. Long story short, we've been trying to record this podcast since last night. So, many a false start, audio drops, Skype you suck, whatever. Basically, are essentially recording a phone call. And even though I intended this podcast to be as no frills, bare bone, no post-production as possible, it's even more so now. I mean, before I was playing like an 8-bit version of the Game of Thrones thing into the phone with my, into the microphone with my iPhone, and I just said, screw that, and I did that lovely, lame acapella, whatever the heck that was just now. It'll be used against me in court someday. So, yeah, Jamie, right off the bat, wanted to thank you for joining us here, or joining me here on the STVD podcast. Usually, the co-host is Dan, as you know, who you're actually more chummy with than I am lately. But Dan has been quite busy, and I don't think he's even gotten a chance to watch this episode yet. Even I think you were telling me that, right?
Yeah. I don't think he has.
Yeah. So I have been in touch with him today. I actually spoke to him on the phone, which is a rarity in of itself. I would say the odds are pretty good that for at least some, if not all, of the rest of the season, he will join in. So at the very least, I'm thinking this will be a trio covering Game of Thrones for the next few weeks. I won't, yeah. You know, devil's threesome. But, sorry. yeah, it's you and me, and that makes two, so I don't know what I'm talking about, but I do want to apologize, not just for me rambling there, but I want to apologize to our tiny band of absurdly patient listeners. Doing the math, we've only done one podcast this year. I think we've only done 3 podcasts over the last 6 months. And we used to average an output of roughly 50 to 60 podcasts a year. So, yeah, we've slacked off a bit. Some of that's due to the fact there's no running series that we're covering, like Better Call Saul. And a lot of it's just real life, just getting in the way, hard to schedule these things, just too busy, blah, blah, blah. I do feel really bad that we finally, me and Dan, did get together to do that True Detective Season 3 podcast back in February. But we only did the first half of the season, and we never came back to do the second half of the season. So, you know, and there's a few podcasts like that that we were supposed to come back and do, you know, a follow-up one to, and we never did, and, you know, I'm a person who prides himself on being a man of his word, and it feels like, you know, it's a litany of broken promises to the listeners. So, you know, I kind of want to do it now. Jamie, would you mind subbing in for Dan while I do this? Keep in mind...
I will whatever I can, you bet.
Okay. Keeping in mind that more often than not, Dan's half asleep, so, you know, I don't expect too much of you at this part. So, start the clock. First, True Detective, Season 3. The second half of the season, it was fine. Turned out, mystery was never that great, but the acting and the characters were. That's what really anchored the series. Hey, look, they can write characters, you know, a person of color and a woman in the same season. Way to go, True Detective. Turned out to be a lot better than season two. I enjoyed it. Yay, glad we watched it. That's that. I think you liked it too, right, Jamie / Dan?
In pure Dan fashion, I'm going to say that I haven't got around to watching that particular show yet. But I can inform you that my brother and sister-in-law's boss had a return cameo extra thing going on with this season. And I don't even know who he is in there, so I can't even give you that information. That's how useful I am.
Wow, you are being quite Dan-like. Anyway, that's True Detective. That's taken care of. Podcast done. Okay, the next two I know Dan hasn't gotten around to watching, so you really won't have much to say. Crown, season two. Not as good as season one because you don't have Churchill / John Lithgow in the season, and instead you're dealing with the Duke of Edinburgh way too much, and he's a big bore. But still very watchable, and totally looking forward to the season three where they recast the show because it fast forwards another 8 to 10 years, and you got Olivia Colman and Helena Bonham Carter, etc. Really looking forward to season three. Great show. Just season two, not as good as season one. I know Dan never got a chance to watch it, but Jamie, did you watch The Crown, or are you like Dan on that one?
No, I watched both of the seasons, and I did like them both, and I was desperately missing Churchill in the second season. However, I did kind of, I think I liked the second season a little bit better, even without Churchill. But I'm both looking forward to the next season with the recast, and I'm also a little apprehensive about it, because I really got to appreciate these guys, so we'll see.
Yeah, understandable. It's only because they got Olivia Colman, who I've been a big fan of for a long time. And it has nothing to do with her Oscar-winning performance recently. You know, it's about the British show Broadchurch and stuff like that. She's always been solid. Okay, so Crown 2, taken care of. Travelers, Seasons 2 and Season 3, which very few of our listeners actually watch, so I'll be really quick about this. Both seasons are really good. I probably like season two a little bit better because of the main antagonist, Enrico Calatonini, whatever his name is, the guy from Veronica Mars, Person of Interest, and Just Shoot Me, is a great foil for the team. Season three is very good too, don't get me wrong, and it's got some serious shocks and losses there, but it's really about being pissed off that Netflix canceled the show. It needed another season to really finish its story, I think. But Netflix now considers itself like a real network, so now they're canceling everything. I don't mean the stupid Marvel series. I mean the shows people actually should be caring about. You also watched Travelers, right?
Yes, I did. And I was really upset about the canceling of the show, and it was like reliving Sense8 all over again, but except they're not going to do a big movie to actually finish it off. So.
Yeah, I guess probably because they don't feel Travelers has enough of a following to merit it. But it's just a shame because I don't recall. It's been a while since I've seen it, but I don't know if it ended on an absolute cliffhanger, but I do feel it wasn't resolved. I do feel there was more to go. So, oh well. Anyway, got to stop it there. That's Travelers Seasons 2 and 3. Another podcast done. The only other thing we didn't get around doing was the best of 2018. And it's too bad. I had a whole lot of really fun categories I had in mind. I was going to do top 10 shows that people have recommended to me that I haven't gotten around to watching yet. Literally. That was going to be one of the categories. Even though by now, I've actually watched about four other shows. Like Killing Eve or Handmaid's Tale and whatever. All I'm going to say was my top three, you could have swished them around in a glass. And no matter what order they came up, it probably would have been correct. But I would say The Americans is my favorite series for last year. Just edging out Better Call Saul and Counterpart Season 1. Part of Season 2 was also in that year, and that's kind of what dragged Counterpart down, because the first half of Season 2 is But, yeah, it was all about The Americans for me last year. It was a great finish to their season. And that's really what the podcast would have concentrated on as far as I was concerned. That and all the disappointments, like, you know, wow, Legion kind of sucked. Stuff like that. So, and Dan didn't only watch about four shows last year, so he really wouldn't have had much to contribute on that one either. I'm confident he would have said Better Call Saul was his favorite show, though. I'm I will go out on not much of a limb with that one. Okay, old business taken care of. We are up to date on our podcasting. Now we can move forward with, wait, what are we here to talk about again? Oh, yeah. The Game of Thrones. So, again, a little sense of deja vu for you, so I apologize, Jamie, but I'm assuming, and I actually know this already because we've recorded this like 17 times already, much like myself, you've probably felt the need to watch some previous episodes before the season started just to reacclimate yourself, I'm guessing. Correct?
Yes. I watched the entire series again over the last year, and then I watched the last two seasons over the last month, and then after watching episode one of this season, I rewatched the pilot to compare.
Ah, yes, and I do believe we're going to be talking about that quite a bit during this podcast, or maybe not as much as I thought a couple hours ago when we were first recording, but we're going to talk about it quite a bit. I've rethought some stuff. I've had the time to think about this. Myself,
like Groundhog Day.
Yeah, pretty much, but it won't. Well, we'll see. A part of it will be. Myself, I had not originally planned to do much of a rewatch. But now there's been a new, let's call her a Khaleesi in my life, who really wanted to watch the show and hadn't before. So I did commit to a major rewatch. I think it was like from mid-February to the beginning of April we finished it up.
How did she handle the Red Wedding?
I recorded her. So I did just like those YouTube videos. It was hysterical. I should have posted it on YouTube, except it's too many years later. Who wants to see that? The big things that hit her were the things that hit everybody. Red Wedding, absolutely, and the Hodor episode was a bad one. Oh, by the way, it got me really bad again too. It's like, oh look, I can still cry.
Yep, it's still sad.
It still works. You know what? I'm gonna save that for my prediction thing later on. But it does connect to that episode. I probably just gave it away, actually. I think I enjoyed the show a little bit more than I recalled. I mean, I always liked the show. I loved the first four seasons, and then it started to fall off a bit for me because I've never been a big fan of season five for a few different reasons. I think Cersei's an idiot that season. I get bored with the House of Black and White. There's a whole bunch of things I really don't like in season five. Season six kind of makes up for it, and then season seven just loses all sense of reason and logic, but it's kind of fun. But I realize now, taking a writer's standpoint, sometimes you got to screw logic just to get the story told and to be entertaining. And maybe I shouldn't be such an ass about it the way I think a lot of people were, myself included. Although ships that can move faster than the speed of light just bother me. But, but I was just very struck by the storytelling and how so many things that were planted just throughout season one all come to fruition throughout the series. And whether it be little joking references that we don't realize, oh, that's a much darker joke than I expected. Theon makes a joke about being a eunuch early in season one. He didn't know what was going to happen to him a few seasons later. Stuff like that. As well as, you know, actual important story and plot stuff as well. So, I'm very glad to have done a rewatch. I feel much more confident in what all the characters' names are now. I'm still likely to botch the pronunciation of a number of characters' names, because that's what I do. I was looking forward to it. And yes, like yourself, after watching the premiere, I totally went back and then did a rewatch of the pilot back-to-back with the premiere just to catch all the moments that were mirrored from those two episodes. Because I caught on to maybe two of them myself while I was watching. But I was seeing articles and lists online going, oh, okay, I just need to watch the episode and just see it for myself. And you realize, oh, there's like a dozen things that are mirrored. we're probably going to focus on a few of them. I don't know if everything needs to be focused on as far as the mirror part. You know, it's like, you know, something like, hey, here's Tyrion with a bunch of naked whores, and here's Bronn with a bunch of naked whores. Okay. You know, that's not that big a deal.
You could really just close your eyes and grab any episode out of the series, and you got like an 85% chance that that's exactly what you're going to grab.
Right. Or something as simplistic as, you know, a male Stark stands at the tree and is approached by a female from the family. I was like, okay. You know, Ned is approached by Caitlin. Here, Jon is approached by Arya. It's done deliberately, but it doesn't merit notice other than that. It's not like what happens at the end of the episode. That's a bit more important to focus on. Or even the beginning of the episode, which I think was kind of interesting, and that's where we're going to kick this off in a minute, as far as the mirroring aspect of it. I did say this in one of our previous takes. I'll do it again. I'm probably, not just for this podcast, but all the next five, I guess it'll be five, right? I'm going to try to shy away from doing any actual recapping, only because the show is really dense. I mean, with action, but really with dialogue. Recapping would be more like a transcript than an actual recap. Everyone listening has watched it at least once, possibly twice. And not to mention, the last four episodes are slated all to be like 80 to 90 minutes long. I try recapping that. We're going to have like 5-hour podcasts. I know we're known for long podcasts. I would rather not go down that road if we can avoid it. So I'll do like the briefest, you know, in quotation marks, of summaries possible, or even just what the thematic idea of the episode is, and then we'll just proceed just going back and forth. And I really want to let you do more of the talking here than I typically do, because, you know, I tend you know, I tend to like to hear the sound of my own voice, even though I hate the sound of my own voice. It's an irony. This episode, the episode that didn't give us the title until after it had already aired, which I'm thinking they're going to do that with the entire season, which I both love and hate at the same time. I post threads for it. It's like, what do I call it, you know, on Facebook? But on the other hand, I love that little, oh, we're not going to even spoil that for you. Okay, very smart, guys, very smart. This episode was, you know, originally titled, when I say originally, I mean, oh, really original, guys. Winterfell. Really? That's the title? Whatever. But it's because I think 80 to 90% of the action of the episode takes place at Winterfell. And this entire episode is really about reunions and characters encountering each other for the first time. It's, you know, it's exciting to have everyone all together in pretty much one place. Or for the most part, wow, my stomach is making weird noises. I hope that didn't come across on the microphone just now. But before I get to that, before we get to the actual story, how about that opening credit sequence? What did you think of that? Did you want to like rewind it and like, wait, can I see that again? Because there's a lot of shit going on there.
I did rewind it and watch it again. Actually, I did. So yeah, I did want to do that, and then I did do that.
So I recall from a previous recording earlier today. Since you caught on to things that even I didn't catch on, why don't you tell me again, like, I fell asleep and I forgot what you said?
Besides our locations being different, like, you can cover all of that. The pictures that we have that usually run across, like, the embellishments that have, like, the stag and the lion and all of that, those have changed. And pictures, I think, is supposed to be depicting the Red Wedding, because we've got like the guys like holding up the head of the wolf, and then there's another one that has the dragons in it, the three dragons. Mm-hmm. So they changed some of that to kind of give us some of the previous storytelling.
Right. I mean, it's funny because I've never really, and I don't know who has, that aspect of the opening cards, I never really paid much attention to. I mean, I it was one of those things. You just the first time you saw it, I was like, oh, it's the symbols of the different houses spinning around the weird compass like thing that we saw that in that one episode at the Citadel or something. The fact that they've incorporated changes into it, where it's now it's kind of telling some of the story of the show, I find fascinating. There's a little voice in my head that's like, hey, could they have been doing that all along? It's like, no, we would have caught that, right? We wouldn't have missed that. But the fact I was aware, like, something's different about that makes me think this is the first time they've ever done that.
Right.
Yeah, and then the locations. Well, first of all, they start off with the wall. And usually when they're, the opening credit sequence always gets to the wall, like, halfway through. I mean, usually starts at King's Landing. You know, we get Winterfell. We might get a couple other places if we're in the north or Westeros or whatever.
Yeah, it's about the time we hit the bridge. And then it shows the wall.
Yeah. But this time, we start off with the wall with the big hole in it, and we see, and as it's going by the map, we see all these tiles being flipped, but there's like this icy blue kind of thing, and I'm guessing that that's actually showing the progression of the Night King and the White Walkers, and them making as they making their way south, quite frankly. So it's going to be interesting to watch this credit sequence throughout the season to see if it continues to show that its progression. I guess it will, right? It has to.
I would think so. I think it'd be really weird for them to just put it in one and then just keep it that way.
Which, and the thing I like, kind of like about that is, hey, guess what, guys? We should be paying attention to the opening credits every episode now. You know, that's why they showed The Last Hearth, because that was going to be important in this episode, as we saw towards the end of it. And I think that's the first time we've ever seen The Last Hearth. I don't remember ever being there before. Have we? No, right? We've never seen the House of.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no. Yeah, I'm gonna assume it's just one of those random castle areas that, you know, that's near the wall that we've heard about, but we've never actually seen. Much like, not quite the way we, up until a certain point last season, we kept hearing about Casterly Rock, but we never saw it, and then we finally saw it.
Right.
Which I actually thought was a running gag in the show, like, but they're never going to show us Casterly Rock, are they? You know, then they finally did it, ah, that's it? Big deal. I would have rather seen Fraggle Rock than that. Yeah, and also, the opening cards, they also go... They do a deep dive in the locations. So not only do we see, you know, the exteriors and the structures of say Winterfell or King's Landing, they go down below. We get into the crypts of Winterfell. We go down below King's Landing. We see that giant dragon head that we when what's his name was doing target practice with the giant spear thing. What's his name? What is the character's name? Hand of the King, Hand of the Queen, rather. What's your name?
Qyburn.
Kyburn, thank you. Great character. Yeah, that's not gonna be there. So really enjoyed that. It's also funny because now the show has become so. Since characters have consolidated, it's probably also probably the fewest locations that we've seen in almost any episode, outside of maybe. No, we even got more in Battle of the Bastards, I think. So that was kind of interesting. It was just very confined.
Cause, yeah.
You know, like I said, everything was either, you know, mostly Winterfell, a little bit of King's Landing, and in the waters right by King's Landing, and then The Last Hearth towards the end. So, the episode, and about that whole business of mirroring, as we were talking before, this episode begins with the kid trying to make his way through the crowd. He's all excited to see the royal procession of, you know, the Unsullied and Dothraki and, you know, obviously Jon Snow and I always mispronounce her name. I call her Khaleesi just because it's easier for me to say than Daenerys. It's Daenerys. That's not hard to say. What's wrong with me? But it, I know a lot of people were talking about how it mirrors Arya in the pilot and what she does. It's kind of funny that she's the one who kind of lets him get by, almost like she's remembering that she was like that herself at a younger age or something. But I also thought, and I didn't see this mentioned in a couple articles, which struck me as odd because I don't think I'm that observant. And also maybe it's the fact that Bran was climbing up to the top turrets over at Winterfell, and he got all excited as he was watching from above and seeing the all the troops marching towards Winterfell. So it's kind of like both of them. It was odd that I didn't see that mentioned, unless it was mentioned in an article that I missed, which is very possible. I didn't read that many articles.
I don't think I ran into it, but yeah, I noticed that too. We got Bran climbing, if that's what he does. Did.
Yes.
Now well, he just sits there.
Yeah, it's tragic to see the episode, go back and watch the pilot and him promising not to climb again, but then she kind of jokingly scolds him because he lies whenever he's looking at his feet. It's like, well, I guess he paid the price for that. But yeah. Now he's Mystic Spock in a Professor X chair or something. So, okay, let's just go through some of these things and feel free whenever you want to take the reins and, you know, start talking about whatever, because, you know, I'm going off the seat of my pants here. But the big thing in the opening of the episode is it's the meeting. It's Khaleesi meeting the Starks and the other people assembled there for the first time, as well as Jon Snow being reunited with people like his brother or other people throughout the episode, but especially in that opening scene when again mirroring the pilot, you know, where it was Robert and Cersei. Now it's, you know, Khaleesi, yeah, I did it again, and John arriving there. But what did you think of it, or what did you observe about that whole section there?
There's a few little bits on it. That scene with the royal procession, that was filmed in the same location as the pilot episode, and they have not used that location for any other scenes, so it's just been those two. The score that was used in the pilot was reused for this scene. There's just this entire episode was intention, I think. Like there was no, I mean, everything was super intentional. And
my friend was telling me, I can't remember if it was her idea or she heard someone else say it. Doesn't matter. I'm just saying it's not my original idea, but kind of comparing it to Star Wars The Force Awakens to Star Wars A New Hope. Like, just only here it's really meant to be deliberate and you don't have to feel bad about it. Whereas in Force Awakens, it's like, yeah, are you sure you're not ripping it off or whatever? And then I want to say, oh yeah, go watch Superman the movie and Superman Returns. I want to see ripping it off.
Right.
Had to get all my
teachers. I mean, they've even got it down to, I mean, well, talk more about that in our individual reunions that we get to have. Like, all of them even actually physically mimic either the last time the characters saw each other or the first time these characters met each other.
Right. One silly joke I neglected to repeat. It's actually literally where our previous podcast recording got cut off. Gotta say it. So you've got, again, you got the Unsullied and the Dothraki and, you know, Khaleesi and Jon and the Hound and Brenly and all these people all marching, Tyrion and Varys. I call him Varys. Varys. All showing up. But you've got all the villagers, all the northerners, all the Winterfell, you know, township people, whatever the heck you call them, all lined up watching. And, you know, and they're in awe, and there's a little bit of fear, you know, when they see all these people, whatever. And, of course, the dragon's flying overhead. But the funniest thing about it is there's a certain, if you really watch it a certain way and you're looking at their reactions, and especially when Grey Worm and the character whose name we were debating how to pronounce earlier, How have we decided how we're going to pronounce it?
I think we went with Missandei. Missandei. I don't remember. It's so close to Melisandre. I can never remember.
Yeah, that's why I get screwed. I was like, ooh, bad writing. Why would you have two characters with such similar sounding names?
I don't know. Ask Tolkien.
Yeah. Oh, well, geez. Can we just call her Melissa? Anyway. But when I realized that, hey, you know what? This is the first time they're seeing people of color. And the look on their face. I kept thinking, well, I keep looking for some like Confederate flags, or like they kind of look a little bit like those.
They look a little shocked. They double take.
What's that? You know, some of those guys had a little bit of a Duck Dynasty look about them. Anyway. So. When Daenerys and Jon do show up and they're being presented to Sansa, who, you know, she's the Lady of Winterfell. You know, she's, you know, she in his absence, you know, she's like the Wardeness of the North or whatever you want to call her, the person in charge. So in a sense, she's kind of standing in for Ned Stark, did in the pilot, I would think, because there is that one. This is one of those very deliberate things what you were referencing before. When Khaleesi introduces herself to her, whatever, or gets introduced to her, excuse me, and she says something like, you know, Winterfell is yours, your grace. There's a big difference between the way Ned said it to Robert and his tone and the way Sansa says it to Khaleesi. And I just thought it was just, that was kind of a delightful, fun little parallel there.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't imagine two more opposite probably states of mind than Ned and Sansa would have in these two episodes, I think.
Yeah, Sansa's given her the read.
It's interesting. I don't know if I would call Sansa a necessarily a polarizing character, but she's definitely one of those characters that people have very strong opinions of, and some people, their opinions have changed, and some people, they haven't. I'm one whose opinion of Sansa definitely changed as the show evolved. I've actually become, for the most part, I'm Team Sansa. I'm pro Sansa.
Same.
But I know people, like the person I was redoing the rewatch with, who rarely will give her any, can barely tolerate her at times. And I kind of, to a point, I was agreeing with her. In this episode, much the way I was agreeing with her in the previous season. Except we as viewers are favored with having all the knowledge that characters like her don't have, where we actually find ourselves having to agree with John. We're like, you know, all you guys all whining and bitching about, you know, titles and who bends what knee and whatever. It's like, yeah, there's a couple hundred thousand zombies coming to kill us
all.
There's
actual dead people coming to get us.
That should take a little bit of precedence than, you know, this royal political bullshit right now. Put that aside, I kind of agree with her. I certainly understand her being at the very least skeptical, if not suspicious, of these people she's never encountered before. And she never agreed to, you know, bend the knee or any of that other stuff. So right. I totally get that. You know, and I think she's learned from, even if there were like some of the worst people possible, but maybe she's learned not to be all that trusting or to be a little bit, you know, on edge. From people like a Cersei, like a Littlefinger, you know.
Exactly. She's learned that what's going to get you killed is gullibility. I mean, more than anything, it's gullibility. I mean, she makes mention of it a couple times, you know. Like, I can't believe that you would believe her, you know, when she's talking to Tyrion. And she learned from Cersei, and that's kind of why I really like her now, because she's, like, she hasn't reached that point of having to be cruel. But she's using all of the power and the brains that Cersei really learned how to move the pieces around to make them work for her. She's just not cruel. So will she ever be able to push as far as Cersei did? I mean, I don't know, because let's hope not. I don't want her to turn into, like, I don't want her to turn into somebody nasty, because I really respect her. But I, like, just as... as an actress, I've really enjoyed watching her transformation because she's even carrying herself like Cersei. There's so many mannerisms, and she just, after watching the pilot, it's like, man, this girl has come a long way.
Yes. And the fact that, I mean, all she needs to do is just smirk a little bit more and maybe tilt her head to the side more, and then she's like new Cersei.
More wine.
More wine. But I was driving me crazy during the rewatch. I was like, Cersei's head ever straight? She's always tilted. It's always tilted.
No, she's always very tilty.
She reminds me of like those guys on Saturday Night Live, the bit with the Roxbury guys. Yeah. She looks like she's like, dun, 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 dun. Anyway. Wow, I was not expecting to say that. So, since you mentioned it, and again, since we're not doing pure chronology recapping here, it doesn't matter. That was actually one of the little many, there's a many reunions on the show. And some you're like, oh, you're waiting to see like John to see his, his long lost brother for the first time since, season one or whatever. But things I hadn't thought of until it happened on screen. Like, oh yeah, Tyrion and Sansa. That's interesting. The fact that
I hadn't thought of that either, but I liked it.
And I love the Madrid. Like, yeah, although Cersei already thought he was the killer to begin with, based on, it looked like he was being, that Joffrey was even pointing at him, and she would have suspected him anyway. But, yeah, Sansa, hightailing it out of there didn't help it. Didn't help any.
No, it certainly didn't. And did they ever, do they know who actually killed Joffrey? Like, did they have that discussion at any point where they're both like, oh, I didn't do it. No, I didn't do it. But we know who did it.
It's a great question. I don't know if that conversation ever happened. Unless it was like an off screen kind of thing.
Well, sure. I'm just not sure if they'll ever, I don't think that they'd ever waste any time having that conversation at this point, but it's awkward. It's just kind of funny because both of them are like, hey, so interesting what you did there. And neither of them were like, I didn't do it.
Right. Well, if Tyrion is as clever as Sansa used to think he was, and quite frankly, I debate how clever he's been for the last few seasons. He certainly doesn't make great decisions, as far as waging a war. He makes decisions as well as Brienne protects people, quite frankly. But
I don't know, so I'm really funny about comparing the two of them.
Outside of the mountain, like the tallest character and the shortest one, and they both fail at what they're supposed to be known for. Worst bodyguard ever. What was I going to say? I'm thinking that he would probably have figured it out. We both rewatched certain things recently. When they were...
Well, I guess there is... Right, like in... Yeah, they do... Yeah, he had to have probably got that information at some point, because when they were planning this whole takedown before they lost to the dragon, they kind of had all of the major players there that were involved with Joffrey, so...
It wasn't... Yeah, I mean, when they were trying to get all those people united with Daenerys, wasn't House, what's her name? Olyanna. Why am I forgetting their house's name all of a sudden?
Are you talking about Highgarden?
Yeah, Highgarden, yeah, but why am I forgetting their family name? Marjorie and, you know who I'm talking about. Wow, Tyrell. Wasn't she part of it? Didn't she show up there as part of the... We're going to join forces against whatever, but they ended up getting wiped out anyway.
Yeah, that's what you're
referring to. Okay. Because that would be the time where it's like,
Yeah, then they probably got it all squared away at that point.
Yeah. Oh, that's one of the tricky things about a show like this, or any, is that there's so much information we have that characters don't have, but you can't spend that much time with characters telling each other things that we already know, unless it's meant to be a major revelation.
Right. Like, if it's really going to go somewhere, but
yeah, like, you know, like there's a reason why we need to see Jon Snow finding out about his parentage, or even Samwell finding out what happened to his father and brother. That's really important to the story. But however, do we need Arya to really fill Jon in on what she's been doing for the last few years? Yeah, I've used my sword once or twice. Oh, have I mentioned that I'm probably the biggest mass murderer, you know, in the family? You know, I think I can give the Kingslayer a run for his money, or even the Mountain, quite frankly. Did I happen to mention I killed all the goddamn fries? All of them. Me. What have you been doing? Ooh, boo-hoo. You know, you're letting wildlings go free. I'm killing everybody. But, you know, but we're not...
Or like John getting caught up with the whole backstory on Bran. I mean, Sansa pretty much said it when he went in and he, like, kissed Bran on the forehead. And Sansa looks over at him like, yeah, brother's a freaking weirdo now.
Oh, yeah.
So...
Oh, by the way, even though I know that there are some people who are reacting to Bran like, okay, he's kind of creepy. And I'm like, well, I guess I know why people are saying that. It's fine. I think that's more of a funny comment to make. I just like the fact that he's always just sitting there. He's just whatever. But he has, you know, for someone who's not Mr. Funny Pants or whatever, he had some of the lines that made me smile or laugh the most in the entire episode. First of all, when they're all having...
Oh, and the last one, too, like when he held up the little scroll, you know, when Sam's like, oh, did you see all of that? And he just holds up the scroll.
Mm-hmm. He's, you know, didn't think this Red Raven had a sense of humor. But when he basically shuts everyone down, it's like, hey, we don't got time for this. Night King has your dragon, and they've broken through the wall. Hello?
Everyone's face.
And at that point, so it was funny, at that point, I didn't think anybody knew yet. But then when they cut to, like, later on, it seems like this was information that they had at Winterfell already, that they'd come through the wall already. So I got a little confused, but I thought that he was being, like, you know, Mr. Psychic, or saw through the eyes of his little birdies or something, and was giving everybody fresh information. Although I think maybe... I don't think John and Danny knew yet, but I thought maybe...
I don't think so, because she looked a little bit horrified. Like they both had, you know, they had a pretty particular look when they realized the dragon had been turned.
Right, but I think it was because the way Sansa was talking about it, she knew about it this already. Like, she already brought back her the Bannermen from there and blah, blah, blah. So I like that. And, of course, you know, I'm waiting for an old friend, which was... And I will... I'm not Mr. Sixth Sense here, where I can predict things ahead of time, but I called, as soon as he said that, I turned to the person I'm watching with, and I said, oh, it's Jamie. It's going to be Jamie. It's got to be Jamie. Mainly because he was the only real main character I could think of who I haven't seen in the episode, like, outside of the Night King himself. And I was like, it's going to be, and when I saw that, like, the hood thing, oh, it's Jamie. It's like, oh, shit, he doesn't know who's there right now.
Yeah, they left him out there in the courtyard overnight, freezing to death, instead of bringing him inside where he could wait for his friend inside.
No.
Did you see there's a fake GoFundMe right now to get a wheelchair ramp built in the courtyard of Winterfell?
Oh, no.
It's pretty great.
They should have a ramp that leads all the way up to that small turret that he fell from in the first place. Wow. So, and again, and that would be, of course, if one could pick the coolest quote unquote mirroring from first episode ever to this episode, it's that both episodes end with Bran and Jaime. It's beautifully deliberate, and that's really,
I liked Bran's face, because even though he was just kind of doing his, like, Bran stare, there's, like, a little smirk there. You know, just the tiniest hint of, like, hey, remember me?
Hey, dude.
What's up? What's up, bitch?
Yeah. I hope no one pushes you out of something.
Did you notice too, in the pilot episode compared to this, I've found little mentions of it throughout the years, but like getting to watch this episode and then watch the pilot, like it was very, very obvious, but there's this, a lot of viewers are saying that the further away a Lannister's loyalty gets to their family, the darker their hair turns. They're no longer blonde. And if you look at all of our Lannister characters in the pilot versus this episode, there is a massive difference.
Yes.
In the color of their hair.
Yes. I did notice while watching, doing the rewatch, and this much I did comment on. I didn't think of Jaime. I can't confess to that. I did think about Tyrion. Because I was like, do you realize that Tyrion had like pretty much like golden blonde hair?
Yeah, like blonde hair.
Yeah. And then as we were watching, it's like, and it's shit because then he had like, it went to like more of like a chestnut to, you know, just downright brown. And now, I swear, it's like Hasidic Jew black hair right now. It's like it's super dark right now.
Yeah.
I can say that because I'm Jewish, so I can get away with that.
That's how Jamie's is, though. Like, yeah. Jamie's is really
You're right. Jamie's hair is darker, too. You're right. That's very. That, well, obviously it's not, that's no coincidence. It's just, it's fun. It's like, that's really strange. Everyone keeps talking about, hey, why is no one commenting on the show about the fact that only a Targaryen can ride a dragon? That should tell you right away, Jon's a Targaryen. Hello? Doesn't Khaleesi know shit? You know, but no one's
mentioned. Yeah, but then also there's the whole thing that a Targaryen like isn't going to suffer a burn. I mean, and we found out with Jon like pretty early on that doesn't. Maybe if you're like 100% pureblood, like an incestual child, perhaps. But apparently that doesn't count if you're part Stark.
Well, did Jon get burned?
Like his hand got burned when I don't remember which battle it was. He burned his hand, like, and it was really clearly obvious. Like they made a point of you seeing that.
Okay,
he burned himself.
Well, I'm gonna go on the assumption it's because he's not a pureblood. So
exactly, yeah. That's what I'm gonna roll with too. I'm gonna take that on the whole dragon thing too.
Right. Oh, do you? Because now I love it. I just like skipping throughout the episode. I am very partial now because I believe it to be true. It's not a rumor, a theory, I guess is the right phrase. But the fact that it's even being spoken about by people who work for Game of Thrones, like the one of the designers and whatnot, makes me go, yeah, okay, I'm going to go along with this. I'm assuming, because you've done copious research compared to me, you've read the one about Drogon and who that dragon is actually the soul that's within that dragon, so to speak. Have you read about that?
Yeah, because it's named after
Drogo.
Because it's named after Drogo, like called Drogo, but I think that would be kind of cool. I mean, would they be able to really, is that something we just kind of know by reading little things? Because would they go into that long explanation in the show?
I don't think they'd bother. I think it would just be something for, you either catch it and then you can get a kick out of it or not. I mean, she named each of the three dragons after someone in her life, whether it be her brother, her father, or
John's dragon, or whatever. I guess it's kind of John's dragon now. Like that's Rhaegal,
right?
So, and that's named after what would be his biological dad,
right? Which again, not a coincidence. And but what I like about, you know, because the whole thing was because, you know, she came out of the, it was his funeral pyre. That was a flame, right? And that's when she came out of it with the
right.
eggs that had hatched. So
yep.
You know, there, you can see like you can there the transfer would happen at that point. What makes that so funny is, and one of the more memeable moments in the episode, although I guess there were a lot of moments now that I think about it, was the John and Danny having their little kissy face routine, and we have that we have that great moment with. It's Drogon doing that. It's Drogon just like staring and, you know, like, and like, and when you think, hey, if that thing's got the spirit of Khal Drogo, that makes this way funnier.
Right? I'd agree. It absolutely does.
So that's what makes me go, I'm going along with that. Like I said, this episode, a lot of it is just about, oh, these two characters seeing each other for the first time, either ever or just in a, or more likely in a long time. Arya, the fact that they were able to combine her seeing the Hound and, is it Gendry? It's Gendry. Gendry, not just in the procession, but later on when he's forging, you know, stuff with the Dragonstone. I loved her little moment with the Hound. That's just...
Yes, that was fun.
I loved it because it was true to the characters.
And honestly, I think of all the reunions that it was probably the most honest of all of them, really. I mean, I don't feel like anything was rushed. I don't think that was, there was any missteps. I don't, you know, that was just spot on. That's the dialogue the two of them would have actually had.
Yeah, I you know what? I actually agree with that. Because of that, it didn't, and if there was going to be any sentimentality to it, it was, if there was any, it was at best suppressed, you know?
Right.
Which,
yep. All the sentiment was in, that's why you're still alive.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we already know, I mean, I believe we already know, I mean, I'm going to say it, the Hound is not on her list anymore. The Hound is not on her list. Because when we heard her do her list again sometime later on, he was clearly not on the list. Now one could say she thought he had died, so that might be why. But I don't think he'd be on the list anymore.
I don't think so. I think she intentionally removed him from her list because she kind of grew the fuck up and noticed how many times he actually saved her from death. She just returned the favor.
And also even hearing the thing about him basically saving Sansa that time from the whole rape thing. The whole rape thing. Wow. Me too. The Gendry thing.
That shit.
Yeah. The Gendry thing's a little interesting because it seems like, and I don't care to spend that much time on it, but are they implying that there actually could be a bit of a relationship here, which then...
I think that they're kind of alluding to it, which is kind of interesting because... In the pilot, Robert is talking to Ned about how the Starks and the Baratheons need to join houses.
Yeah,
and this would be it.
I absolutely agree. I mean, I love the idea. If they had this in mind all along, again, well done. Yeah, but back then we're thinking, oh, it's Joffrey and Sansa. It's like, turns out to be his.
I'm not sure that I would buy into they had this figured out all the way back then, but I'll take it.
I agree. I didn't mean to imply, oh, they had this in mind from the get-go. I don't think they did, because back then they probably thought they were going to get all the books.
Right.
Although, apparently a few years ago, George R. R. Martin at least told them how he anticipated he was going to end the whole thing, and that's what they're going with. I don't know any, and I think he gave them the major character plot lines, which...
I mean, for real, though, wouldn't it be almost impossible to write these books now? I mean, it really is its own world, and fans... love the books, and they love the show separately and together, but, like, I mean, talk about, that would just be writer's block from hell, I would think.
Yeah, my heart bleeds for him.
Yeah, he had his chance. He had his chance to finish him, you're right.
So, the scene with Gendry, well, there's that interesting thing where she shows him the little drawing, schematic of a weapon she wants him, so she's come up with the design. She wants him to forge for him. I've looked at that drawing a number of times to try to figure out what was going on there. I mean, obviously you have the first part of the spear-like blade, which is going to be made out of dragonstone. Therefore, it could be used to fight, you know, White Walkers and so on. It detaches from the other thing. Now, I think it. I'm guessing it's number one. It's overall when put together, it's like going to be like a big spear.
That's what I would gather from it.
Now, that's the obvious part. The thing I'm trying to figure out is, like, it's a big spear, but why would it? Now, could it be something as simple as, oh, it breaks apart in the sense, because it makes it easier to carry, like, you know, like a pool cue or something that you would separate into two pieces? Or is there something more to it by having to be able to separate that way? Is
yeah, is it like logical function, or is there a twist in this?
Yeah, in effect, if they're going through this much trouble to give us a little peek at the drawing and having, I feel there's got to be something more to it. Because I am curious, and maybe if we have time, we can do a little speculation prediction thing or not. I'm kind of wondering who's left on Arya's list to kill, or does she kill people this season that aren't necessarily on her list, but is she going to play a major part? I've even heard people saying, "Oh, Arya's going to kill Cersei, but she's going to have Jaime's face or something." It's like, that's one way to go. I could see it, but. Eh.
I've heard that too, but I would think I hate to use the term lazy writing, but I think that would be lazy writing.
I agree. I think we've seen Arya kill someone wearing a face already.
That yep, was, it's been done. Front. That trick.
That's great. But I think to kill someone like that, it needs to, and I don't think it's going to be her anyway.
I think if she were to wear another face and there was going to be any sort of switcheroo that happens, I think she's going to be wearing somebody else's face who gets killed, and everyone's going to freak out because they're going to think that person is killed, and then we're going to realize it's Arya, and then we're going to go to credits, and everyone's going to sob.
Yes, that could be possible. That's the thing I've been also saying to people. Like, they're going to kill people that we care about. It's not going to be people that, like, oh, we don't mind. Like, oh, because, like, will anyone care if Euron gets killed? No.
No, not really. And I know there's a lot being said that, like, Arya is one of the two characters that Martin said he would never kill because his wife's, like, her favorite. I'm just going to call BS on that. Like, I can't say what he would put in his books, but I feel like that's the perfect red herring to take her out.
I think everybody's fair game.
Yep, I agree.
Do I think they would kill Arya? Arya would be one of the few legitimate surprises for me, but I can't say I can never say they wouldn't do it.
I think it just depends on how much they really want people to get, like, super hurt.
Well,
that one would hurt everyone, I think.
Well, that's what's going to happen when they kill Tyrion. Oop. Sorry, I see if I'm picking a fan favorite to die on the show, I'm kind of thinking Tyrion.
Really, I feel like he's probably more safe than the rest. For I don't know, I just always have. I can't even give a legitimate reason.
I think story. I'm thinking big picture. I'm thinking story wise, and I think Arya's character would have more play to move into the future. Whereas Tyrion, to some degree, I feel might have played his part to us. I don't know what more he could do. He's never going to be on the throne, and I don't think he has any interest in that anyway.
I don't think that he would.
So at most, he would be if Daenerys does indeed take the throne, he would. I would assume he would remain hand to the queen. But that's about it. I don't know. I just feel like.
There's like this theory though that he's also Targaryen.
Yes, like, I've heard that.
So, that could come into play, but would they really? Would they pull that again? In 5 episodes, I don't know.
Yeah, that's my problem with that theory. Like that's kind of a dumbfounding revelation. I mean, look how long it took. With all the Bran. Traveling in time flashback through to get, which was all about eventually finding out about Jon Snow's parentage, with a little side trip to, oh, and this is how Hodor became Hodor. But generally it was about how Jon Snow, came to be. I would think Tyrion would have deserved something. You can't just drop like, oh, hey, I found this other score at the Citadel. Hey, it turns out you're a Targaryen too.
Yeah, and I would say that in a lot of ways that he's kind of the mouth of the audience. So
yeah.
They would really have to give him an entire episode to really cover that, I think.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it, but I am hardly, clearly just from this podcast and others, I'm not an expert on the show. I'm just thinking just story-wise, I'd be surprised, but I could definitely see him I don't want him to die. I love the character, but I could see it because if I take sentimentality out of it, you're gonna lose people that you care about. You know, you're gonna lose people that you like. Like, I'm fairly certain Jamie will not survive this season. He might even die.
I agree.
He might even die in the next freaking episode, or he might sacrifice himself to make his redemption complete. Or he might be the one to kill his sister, which actually might be the best person for that. You know, it would be the most, And even though she may or may not be pregnant with his baby. And by the way, can we figure that out in a minute? Is she actually pregnant or not? I'm still not clear about that. But I'm fascinated to see, just in the very next episode, what Jamie's fate is going to be. Because if he can make it out of the next episode alive, then I give him all the credit in the world, because everyone in that room kind of pretty much wants him dead, except for his brother, maybe, and Brown, who doesn't care anymore. But
I will be honest with you. I just, my gut says that when he goes, it's going to be a sacrificial death, but it's going to be on behalf of Bran of Tarth.
Oh.
Because there's been so much building of that relationship I think,
yeah,
you know, she's the first person that really honored him for who he was and not what his status was. And it changed, like I really think she was the start of Jamie growing up and realizing who he was and what he could be and all of that. So
no, that's real. I like the sound of that. I like that a lot. Just pushing forward with this. So the scene between Daenerys, Jorah, and Samwell, probably outside of the screeching kid at the very end, might have been the hardest scene to watch, but for the right reasons.
It was so good. And it was funny because you know, you start out like kind of laughing, and then you kind of are almost crying because it's Sam and he's like the heart of everything, and watching his face go from, okay, well, I can kind of reason with my dad dying, reason with that. It's, you know, and then when he catches his brother, like it really hits him.
Yeah. Because, I mean, even if his brother might have been a bit of a, you know, dick on to him.
I laughed so hard when he was all like, you know, asked, you know, my brother, I was like, yeah, everybody knows Dickon.
But he, you know, cause like you said, cause his father was a horrible person and treated him
like shit.
So the fact that he would even, I mean, give Samuel all the credit in the world for his humanity, for being at least somewhat saddened about that, But yeah, when he gets hit with the news about his brother, and the way the actor handles that, really nice stuff, really good. And rewatching it, I was also watching you know, the performance by Emilia Clarke and Ian Glen during the scene. I really, and I don't think people are giving them enough credit, by the way. It's a really well done scene, I think. It's really, you know, when you know, because like what you were pointing out, the way the emotion changes. For the other characters as well, like Jorah's kind of, you know, he's amused and, you know, great, like, oh, whatever. And then when all of a sudden that news comes out, you see the look on his face, and when he exchanges.
And that's gotta be like so hard for him, because you know, like, he loves Dany and stands behind everything that she's doing, but like, Sam saved his life.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
At great risk.
So this poor guy, he gets hit with this news. He's, you know, he's about as upset as he's ever been on probably the most upset he's ever been on the show, just from an emotional standpoint. Goes out in the Winterfell yard. this
we got baby Professor X sitting there.
And then, you know, like Magic Spock over there with his face and whatever. And like, oh yeah, you you must tell John now. It's like, really?
He's like, now, right
like,
now.
And you're always like, yeah, I'm not his brother. Like, oh, Jesus. But, and then again, you kind of, there is a certain mirroring, him going to encounter John, and he's down in like the crypt area where all the statues are.
When he falls down, and remember when he falls down the stairs, and like the first time John ever meets him, mm-hmm. is Sam falling down the stairs.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I forgot about that. Look at you. Wow, I'm now remembering that. That's right. So let's get to that revelation here, the one that we've been waiting for. And I guess there are some, there may be some difference of opinion on this one, both out there, maybe even on this podcast. I don't know. John finally gets the news. And it's interesting the way Samuel delivers it, because he first brings up what he just found out about himself, about his family, and also to see what how John reacts to it, since he's pledged allegiance to this woman, he's bent the knee, he's clearly in love with this woman, would he have done such a thing? And he starts talking about how he's executed people, like, but this is different. But he's also shown, and he points that he's also shown mercy. Thing that Samuel doesn't know is like, well, once upon a time, she kind of showed mercy too. It didn't quite work out, so maybe that's kind of why. She, you know,
right.
that, you know, that's what I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think her being merciful might have led to her husband being dead. If not, didn't.
Right.
So, what was your, I'll let you go on this one first, because again, this is one of the major things in the episode everyone was waiting for. So, John finds out his dad's not his dad, and his mom, and his mom's, and who his actual mom is.
Yeah, first of all, I kind of laugh, because it's like, dude, your best friend doesn't like your girlfriend. That's not going to work out well. But the, I have mixed feelings on it, because, it didn't need to be really drawn out. I mean, finding out who he was drawn out for us. So it didn't really need to be drawn out. His reaction probably didn't need to be drawn out. But I kind of mentioned this when I was talking to some people on Facebook, but it made me kind of giggle, because it's so you know nothing, Jon Snow. Because like, his immediate reaction is, my dad's been lying to me my whole life. Not I could possibly be part of the biggest prophecy in all seven kingdoms, and oh crap, I just slept with my aunt.
Right.
Like, none of that really happened. Just him trying to wrap his head around it. But I liked that the last time we saw Ned and John together, Ned promised John, the next time we see each other, I'm going to tell you about your mom. And then they never are together again. And when John finds out about his mom, he's standing right in front of the statue of Ned in the crypt.
Oh, that's right. Wow.
And that's the first time it's the first time that we know that he'd been down there. So, again, completely intentional.
Right.
But I'm iffy. There's things I like about how they did it. And then there's also a little bit like, oh, it's just, I kind of wishing there was a little bit more in there.
You know what it is? My take on it is somewhat similar. Now, as far as how John takes the news and how he reacts, again, I would still to a certain extent, much like the Hound Arya moment, that's pretty much true to John. John's not the most pragmatic or genius of any of the, he's your basic hero. And
yeah, he's like a really, really good guy, not a really smart, clever guy.
But the first thing he's going to go to in his head, and this goes all the way back to season one and joining the Night Watch and everything else, is about honor and about trust.
Yep.
And
yep.
That's the thing that's the first thing that hits him, because what you just said, wait, this in his mind, this renders, you know, everything he had been told by the person he honored and trusted the most in his life, who he thought was his father. So that's his go-to, not the fact that, oh, because he's not, I don't think on the spot he's going to like start to piece together, wait, what's my relation? Let me figure that out now. She's, take away to carry the cousin. Wait, no, nephew. I would be a nephew. I here's the thing. I think, and this is just me spitballing here, I think people's reaction to it, not feeling quite as satisfied as maybe they wanted to be or whatever, it's because we knew two things. Number one, we already know the news. We already have the revelation. So I was just waiting for someone to find out. But part of him finding out is, yeah, but it's not really just about him finding out. We're wondering about how she's going to
react.
She's
going to take it.
So we only got part of it. So that's why I think people might not have felt quite as fulfilled. Like, yeah, how's she going to react? Is she even going to believe it? Why would she believe it? She might be inclined to doubt it, which then goes to the whole dragon thing. Hey, but he can ride a dragon. Isn't that part of dragon lore? And maybe she might not be up on it, but you know who is? Tyrion knows his shit by heart. He should fucking know that. Because he's studied all this kind of crap. So they should be like, hey, wait a second. Let me go back into my scrolls. I think, didn't I read something about Targaryens and dragons? Wait, hold on. But,
you know what, though, is really funny? Rewatching the pilot and, like, you know, after you see this episode and, like, John gets the info and then you watch the pilot and Theon is being such an asshole to John. And I just so badly wanted to, like, John to be like, yeah, ruler of the Seven Kingdoms, dick.
Oh, my God. The way Theon acts in that first episode, you're like, it almost makes the torture of season.
I know, like, you forget how horrible the little slime he was, and you're just like, you kind of deserved it.
He was a piece of crap before he stabbed Robb Stark in the back. I mean, figuratively, not literally, but you know what I mean.
I think he needed to be dismembered to be an all right guy.
since you mentioned Theon, that's one way we can close out that little storyline for the episode. We should throw in the Theon rescuing his sister.
And
I love the
remember
head,
when we remember we had talked about how how did we feel about all of these reunions? And the one that really I said one really bothers me, and I'm thinking you probably thought I was more irritated with the John revelation,
mm-hmm.
but it was Theon and Yara. Like, that reunion, irritated me so much because, here's this big storyline about this guy being a total ass. Then he gets tortured, loses his identity completely, turns into such a coward, finally starts to kind of get tough, and then just walks in and is all like, oh, hey, let's go. that was her rescue?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think if this had been a 10-episode season instead of 6, they might have given us
might
more
have had
time
a cooler rescue.
Plotting
like,
the whole rescue.
Okay,
so I don't know if you
caught this, but the right when this thing cuts to Theon and Yara, that whole scene, the beginning of that scene is someone getting hit right in the eye, being stabbed right in the eye.
I caught it and I know who it is, but go on.
Yeah, Mac from Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh yeah, he did his little cameo in Lost years ago, and now he gets to be on this.
I didn't realize that the writers of Game of Thrones wrote an episode of Always Sunny in return.
Yes, they did.
I never knew that.
Flowers for Charlie, and they also appear.
Yeah.
And they also have a cameo in an episode too. It's bored lifeguards. Which I definitely want to go back and watch the Flowers for Charlie episode just to see that, because I do watch Sunny, and I don't have a strong memory of that episode, so I'm kind of curious about it. And also Martin Starr, that's the one that's harder to see, and I went back and I rewound it. Because it's so darkly lit, but literally right after Mac from Sunny gets it in the face, we see a close up of someone else getting it in the face too, and it's Martin.
Like with
Starr.
The axe.
Yeah, it's Martin.
Yeah.
Not the last one. Not the one that Theon.
Right, not
him.
The one where he pulls the axe out of his
it's the next shot, and that's Martin Starr, who people would know from. I've not seen Silicon Valley yet. But I know him from Freaks and Geeks and other and other Judd Apatow movies and productions and whatever. Always, and isn't he like a lazy teacher on like Community or one of those shows? Can't remember now. But then you start reading articles about, you know, different cameos over the years. And it's like, oh, everyone from like Noah Syndergaard from the New York Mets to this one and that one. And of course, the infamous Ed Sheeran thing. And I know that. Yeah.
I know, back with no eyelids.
Yeah.
How do you sleep with no eyelids?
Yeah, I should, just to make that clear for anyone who didn't catch it, that scene with Braun with the three whores. One of them is clearly talking about the Ed Sheeran character that we saw. Was it last season? Was it just the previous season? I'm guessing.
Last season.
Ed Sheeran, the very redheaded singer who had a cameo that really bothered some people because they gave him too much dialogue or something. They make a clear reference to him being one of the people who got, you know, burned a bit by a certain dragon last season. But the no eyelids, yeah. How do you sleep? I love when...
Yeah, and Ed's Twitter, he had posted something about it. He's like, thanks, Game of Thrones. I always knew I was the survivor.
Putting the fun of that part aside, also a significant scene because that's where Qyburn? Interrupts the goings-on and... has a mission for Bronn, and that Cersei wants him to kill her two brothers. And hey, here's Joffrey's crossbow. You know, the one that Tyrion used to kill my dad. You should use that to kill them with. So that's kind of messed up.
Do you think he's gonna? Do you think he's gonna double cross him?
I have a hard time believing he's gonna go through with it.
I think that if he works his way north and sees what they're facing, he's going to go, fuck it. I'm not going to kill him.
I have a hard time believing that he would do it, so I'm going to have to say no on that one.
He would just take the money and go somewhere different altogether and say, like, screw this whole crazy family.
Yeah, those are the two people who have actually been the nicest to him. Not that he would give way to sentimentality, as we've seen he won't. So what else do we have? Oh, we didn't mention, okay, Last Hearth. The symbol and the kid and Tormund.
Oh, and Cersei and the baby, or not baby.
Which you want to tackle first, and then we can start to wrap this up.
Let's go with Cersei and the, is it a baby, and there are no elephants.
Okay, the elephant stuff was hysterical. Definitely worthy of all of the million memes and jokes that have happened ever since.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I thought there would be elephants. the fact that she brought it up again made it really funny.
I really wanted the elephant.
And then I was saying, I love the excuse they give it because, you know, not long scene, which is like, it's like, also, okay, this show already is already spending like $10 to $12 million an episode. Do you know how much more would have done the fucking elephants? You know, because they got to bring them in. You know, are they going to be CGI elephants? Are they going to be real elephants? You know, are they going to be mastodon?
I do think it's kind of funny, though, because she's all like, well, this bitch gets dragons. I want elephants. And it's like, hello, dragons. Elephants are screwed.
Fuck, didn't the wildlings have mastodons? Which
yes, they have mastodons and literal dragons.
This is a universe where mastodons and elephants coexist. Interesting.
But I think it like also is, I think it's funny, but I think it's really good at kind of showing like how close Cersei is to just pitching a little freaking temper tantrum.
Mm.
You know, like, well, like, as if the elephants were really going to help her win this war.
Yeah, she's got, what do they call them? The Golden Company? The Golden Army? Whatever they are.
Yeah, yep.
So they're all staying on the ships there. Are they lying in wait for whatever happens after the dead? Because I don't think she didn't bring them in to fight the dead. She brought them in to fight Daenerys and those people.
Yeah, I think she's waiting for whoever's left over.
Waiting to see how it shakes out. Okay.
Yep.
Which is interesting because it's weird because Wait, are you assuming they're gonna win, or if they don't win, are you just gonna hightail it out of Dodge? I'm not clear on.
But I think that's part of why it's so important for her to have somebody like the Golden Company, because they're bought and paid for.
Right.
They're not loyal to anybody.
True, 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 true. So the question of her pregnancy, and because it the whole thing came up last season, and but the way they played it, you know, at one point you totally think, oh, she's pregnant. Then you think, oh, was this just a little game she was playing where she could put that, where she could eventually put one over on Tyrion and make them fall for this whole thing when it turned out to not be, and but not necessarily be true. Here's the thing. Some people are pointing to the fact that she's drinking wine as an indication that she's not. My thing is like, I'm sorry, this isn't like, you know, modern day, you know, US,
Right.
whatever. It's like, I don't think back, whenever this, whatever you want to say, what era this is supposed to mirror, so to speak.
Agreed.
I don't think they're like, oh, you know, you're pregnant. You shouldn't be drinking. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I think that's not a good indication.
Yeah,
No,
well,
I'm
I
with
don't.
you.
Her drinking wine has nothing to do with either. You know, plus, look at what she's already given birth to. I mean, like you'd be able to tell the difference if that. If you think wine's gonna have any effect there, you know, with all the incest crap.
Exactly.
Look how giraffe
I
she
don't think we're worried about fetal alcohol syndrome
Yeah,
in
yeah.
this world.
So I'm. But then one could say, would she be so ruthless as to want is to have Jamie killed, knowing that he's the father of her unborn child? I'm gonna say yes.
Yeah, of course.
She's the most ruthless fucking character on the show, pretty much.
Right. She's like super scorned. She accused her brother of treason.
She's wiped. She makes no bones about killing pretty much anyway. I found that online. She killed Tommen's cat. She killed Sir Pounce. It just happened off screen.
Yes.
It's horrible. Horrible. So
Cat killer.
I'm going, see, I'm feeling she is pregnant. See, that's kind of why I like the idea of it being Jamie that ended up being responsible for killing her, because then the, also having the knowledge that he just also killed his unborn child would be kind of ooh. But that messes up other
Yeah, that would
ideas,
be good.
so it's
Do you
just.
want to know what my theory is?
Go ahead.
Okay. This is a theory I've had for a really long time. So then when we found out that she was pregnant or not pregnant or whatever, then I'm like, yes, I'm on to something. So when she got the prophecy, you know, when she was a girl, about the little brother killing her, being her end, you know, being her death after she lost her children. So we've seen her go through that. For the longest time, she thought it was Tyrion that was supposed to be the younger brother that was in the prophecy. But then all of us are like, oh no, the trick is it's Jaime. It's Jaime. He's going to be the one that does it. My theory is that she is pregnant and it's twins. And the second one is going to kill her. She's going to die in childbirth.
Oh, like her mom did.
Yeah. And it will be the younger brother that killed her.
I like the theory. I guess my only problem with it is death by childbirth wouldn't be especially interesting to watch on screen, but it could happen.
And it doesn't, I know it
If
doesn't quite have the revenge that everybody's waiting for as far as the who's gonna stab her. But she's made every single prophecy come true by her own doing and her own selfishness and her own crazy way of handling. She's done it to herself from the very beginning.
let me can I just poke at it one just by saying this. So she'd be giving birth to twins, and so basically we'd be doing the Luke and Leia thing with her, because didn't their mom
I suppose you could, yeah.
because their mom
They have
died,
the
you know,
twins.
after childbirth as well. So.
You know, I read this. I was in this forum a couple weeks ago, and it was literally like there's two groups of people battling about whether Game of Thrones took place in the Star Wars world
Oh boy.
or if it took place in the Battlestar Galactica world. Like, this is an actual argument that's out there between groups of people.
Well, I like that they've established that Star Wars is fiction in the Star Trek universe. I did read that recently, so everything folds onto one another. Gosh, I'm trying to. Oh, we didn't really mention the thing with the kid at the last Hearth, but also echoing one of the opening scenes of the pilot where the White Walkers do their little let's leave this interesting big symbol, you know, spelled out with, you know, limbs.
Their body collage.
Yeah. Now that spiral looks like a symbol that we've seen before. You know, it harkens back to previous things that the White Walkers have left, or even the cave drawings that John was looking at with Daenerys. There is some speculation that symbol also has a certain resemblance to the dragon-like symbol of, well, not dragon-like, it is a dragon, of the Targaryens.
Yeah, I saw that.
I do see the similarity, so I wouldn't discount that necessarily. It's all very swastika-like to me, if you ask me. Anyway, it was a fun, creepy little moment. You know, it's funny. I kept reading. It was reminding people of this, that, the other thing. Thing it reminded me of. If anyone out there has seen the great movie by John Carpenter, The Thing, whenever, you know, a person was burned and it was the thing and they would be on fire, they would scream just like that kid did. It was like identical to that. So it really reminded me of that. I mean, I'm not saying that's what they were going for, but you could put it like a side by side thing.
Remember when we thought, oh, what a horrible show this is. They threw a kid out a window.
Oh, well, this show has made...
like, that's why I told you that I was laughing when I saw the pilot. Like, when I rewatched the pilot, made me laugh.
This show has proven itself to be ruthless, more than ruthless.
It's so brutal. They're stabbing babies and burning kids. And,
yeah, I mean, has anyone forgotten the screaming of Shireen? I mean, good Lord. Still bothers me. They didn't even have to show that. It's still a horrible moment on the show.
Right. Okay. But also had excellent memes.
Oh, yes. Oh, the memes have been nonstop and really, some of them have been really worthwhile. Okay, I feel like we've kind of covered everything I think I felt I wanted to cover on this. Is there anything that stands out before I try to wrap this sucker up?
I think that I just, like, in my notes here, not that it really... is that I don't know that it's that important, but the dagger that was used against Bran that now Arya has, mm-hmm. That dagger actually was Rhaegar's at one point in time.
Oh, no. That's
kind of a fun connection.
Oh, yeah.
And one thought I had is when we have this battle at Winterfell, do you think that we're going to see any of the dead Stark family come back as white?
That was one of the things I was wondering about prediction-wise as far as people coming back in general. And if it's going to be at Winterfell, then, you know, you've got a crypt there.
Right.
I think it's possible. It would be an excellent secret for them to have held on to. Could they resist such a thing?
I know that's just it. And then there's.
Okay. Oh, by the way, since we're saying, I don't mean to cut you off. I'm trying not to do that at all. Hodor should be one of them right now. By the way.
Yeah,
you should see.
My
prediction is we are. I'm saying we are going to see. I don't think we're going to see. I don't even think Ned's down there, quite frankly, because he was executed, and I don't know if he's in the crypt.
Didn't they send his body to Kat, though, like out on the battlefield where Rob was?
But at this point, would anyone had time to like bring him to Winterfell and bear it? I mean, maybe
he
is.
I don't know if he ever made it back or not.
It seems unlikely to me because in the disposition of all these bodies, they're not there. I don't think, I mean, Catelyn and Rob, whatever, at the Red Wedding, no one said, hey, you could have the bodies. I'm pretty sure that didn't happen. So I think it's more likely we'll see Zombie Hodor at Winterfell. That's him returning to Winterfell, right? Because last we left him, they were pretty much going to kill him. He was holding the door, and they were all going to kill him. So That's my
prediction. Yeah, I saw like a meme that had a drawing of him as a white, and it was like everyone's crying. I'm like, yeah, that's gonna suck because you know they're gonna.
Right.
Yeah.
They almost have to at this point.
They have to. Is that about it? There's me saying it.
I think so.
Good.
I think that's about it.
Because I've got all these texts I need to respond to. If you enjoyed this podcast, you will enjoy hanging out on the Facebook page for Serious TV Drama Podcast, where we talk about TV series such as Game of Thrones and so many others. You can find this podcast on the iTunes. Go to iTunes. And you can subscribe to us. You can also rate and review the podcast there as well. Heck, if you just Google Serious TV Drama Podcast, you can find us like 18 other places too. It's really weird. I don't understand it. You know, you can watch us on YouTube. No one else does, and there's nothing to watch, so why do that? And finally, you can follow us on Twitter if I ever remember to send out a tweet for the damn show. What's our Twitter handle? Oh, yeah, it's at STVD Podcast. It's STVD as in Serious TV Drama Podcast. So, it's great to get back to podcasting. It's great that we got this entire recording done all at once. Thank God. It only took, you know, a year and a day to get it done.
Bye.
Be funny if right now is when your audio drops and we lose you. It's like, oh, I don't care. We don't need to hear your own voice no more. Wait, are you still there? There you
are. Perfect.
Well, anyway, once again, I wanted to thank you so much for joining the podcast. And I know you're not going to be available for episode 2, but hopefully 3 through 6 you will be on board for, because I would like to have you here for all.
I should be good to go for those, and I will I'll text you my thoughts on next week.
Okay, I will. Yeah, I'll have someone do an impression. No, I'm not going to do that. All right, so again, so thanks for joining. I hope you guys out there enjoyed this Bare Bones podcast. Once again, no post-production, no musical includes. So how did I begin this podcast? With me doing some really goofy, weird acapella thing? Do I end it that way too? I don't know. But I was just going to say goodnight and, you know, do, 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 do. Yeah, it's all over. Bye-bye.